You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Santa Maria di Sala.
Sei stato intelligente.
Bravo, bravo, bravo,
bravo. Francesco, you're not crying yet.
No, but I'm close. It was a completely amazing day, also because he's a young guy that we trust in him, and today he has done a wonderful work. He's the tired man between the three guys, but he used his intelligence, and that's the magic of cycling.
And the Giro started with you losing one rider because he was outside the time limit, so it's come full circle. Yes.
This is the story of cycling. It's perfect. In this moment, it's perfect also that Nishimura was out from the race in first stage, because today we have won.
Good evening, Rich.
Good evening, Daniel. What was that we just heard?
That was Francesco Pelosi, who's the manager of Nippo Fantini team, celebrating a famous day, a famous victory for his team. Would it be rude to call them minnows of the Giro d'Italia, famously, or what?
Well, we were talking on our drive today, weren't we, about how really only Gianni Savio's team of the wildcards has justified their selection, really contributed quite a lot to the race.
Harsh judgment, I would say. Justified. They're the only ones that have really covered themselves in.
Well, they're the ones that have looked best equipped to contribute something to the race.
Agreed.
It's been a bad 24 hours for you, hasn't it, Daniel?
Why?
Last night you had the disappointment of the...
Oh, yeah.
The UEFA Cup final, I shall call it. Oh, here's some...
That's it.
Oh, things are looking up already, aren't they? Big bowl of crisps.
Glass of Prosecco. We're in Prosecco country.
Yeah, we're also in a hotel where we're not being made to feel very welcome.
Well, we've been made to feel quite welcome. I think we've been the victims of blackmail, actually, because they've overbooked and they're trying to fob us off with a reservation in an inferior establishment and a free dinner.
You're not very easily fobbed off, though, are you?
No, I'm not.
You really stand your ground.
I am tonight.
I've seen another side of Daniel the last 12 hours or so with the football last night, watching that. Sort of the football fan in you came out during that. Very different to the kind of sophisticated wine connoisseur. Okay, you want me to move on?
I can't believe I'm telling you to get back to the cycling.
Topic of conversation. Anyway, will I do the tale of the tapa? 222 kilometres today, stage 18 from Val d'Aura. Is that okay?
Olang, give it the German name.
Okay, German name, Olang, to Santa Maria di Sala, down near Venice. I mean, we're really near Venice tonight. We could have stayed in Venice.
Yeah.
Maybe gone for a gondola ride together.
The finish today was 1 kilometre from where I was working 20 years ago.
Yeah, so you said, a long time ago. Sprinter stage today, downhill all the way, pretty much, gently downhill. Valerio Conti, a non-starter, he had a saddle sore, surprising after he was so active in the break the previous day. Fast start, and it took until about 60 kilometres for the break to get established. In it were Nico Dents of AG2R La Mondiale, whose teammate, of course, won the previous day, obviously emboldened by that.
His name?
Nico Dents.
No, his teammate's name.
Oh, Nance Peters.
Oh, yeah. I was promised a great story today about the origin of his name, but it's not been forthcoming as yet. I think our French colleagues were scandalised by the fact that a couple of them listened to the podcast last night, and Esteban Chavez just called him the AG2R guy. Didn't know his name, but that happens quite a lot.
Mirko Maestri of Bardiani was also in the break, and as was Damiano Cima of Nippo Vini Fantini. A bit of a battle going on for the breakaway classification. Cima and Maestri both in contention for that. Marco Fraporte was leading that classification, but he wasn't there, so good chance for one of those guys to take that classification. There was an intermediate sprint with 62.5 kilometres to go. Very important for the Ciclamino points jersey worn by Arnaud Démare for quite a few days, but Pascal Ackermann very close. Démare actually won the bunch sprint for that for fourth. Ackermann seemed to give up in it, so that looked like an omen for the finish if it was to come to a bunch sprint, but that wasn't at all clear because the three in front rode really hard, and there was some question over whether the bunch was being given accurate time checks, and they either they weren't or they left it too late, and it was really, really touch and go. They rode incredibly well, the three in front. They covered, I think, 48.5 kilometres in the last hour, so they were flat out. It was gently downhill, but still they were going hard.
It's funny you say that about the time gaps, because Francesco Pelosi, who we heard from at the start of the show, paid tribute to his director sportif for the way they had relayed the information to Damiano Cima, and the source of that information would have been the same as for the sprinters teams, wouldn't it? They would have been getting their information off race radio, which is two sources, possible sources. One is the TV, which some guys will be watching in the car, and the other one is race radio.
I mean, they always talk about a minute for every 10 kilometres is doable. And it was about 2.5 minutes with 20 kilometres to go. And it was coming down very, very gradually. And inside the final 10 kilometres, it was hovering around 55 seconds. So it was really, really close. And in the end, Dents had a little go off the front at one point, and I thought that would be curtains for the break. It wasn't. They brought him back and carried on working well together. And in the end, I mean, it couldn't have been closer. Cima went quite early. He's a good sprinter anyway. You were telling me, Daniel, he's 25 years old, Cima. He went quite early, and that was enough for him to win the stage, with Ackermann closing really fast and getting second. They're given the same time. Ackermann second, Consoni of UAE Team Emirates third, Seneschal, Florian Seneschal of De Koenig Quickstep fourth, future Paris-Roubaix winner. And Ryan Gibbons of Dimension Data was fifth. Arnaud Démare only eighth. So it means that Ackermann has moved above Démare in the Ciclamino competition. He's on 226 points to Demar's 213.
Is it in the bag?
Is it in the bag? I think the question is whether Ackermann can get through the next 2 days. We heard a rumour this morning, didn't we, that he wanted to climb off.
I think he might even have got off his bike yesterday
and was been talked into carrying on.
Yeah, so a bit like we were talked into retaining our reservation at this hotel half an hour ago with blandishments like Prosecco and free meals,
crisps,
and crisps and all sorts of other things.
Well, let's get stuck in.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons RAM.
My company now employs about 2,000 people, and a lot of my early bike riding days, especially club runs and then eventually racing, mass start racing, is you understand about strengths and weaknesses, and about obviously helping the guy, the mountain climber on the mountain stage and the sprinter on the flat stage. And you do that every day in this building, the same sort of thing. So, you know somebody who's got a great ability at drawing or painting, but are pretty badly organised, so the head of the studio will help them get organised, and then you reap the benefit of their skills. And so that's what it's... that I learnt that from cycling, for sure.
That's something we all know, that when you're sitting side by side with somebody doing long distances and your body's just doing it, you're just turning the wheels, you can talk like you can't talk in any other walk of life, particularly men, I think. Sometimes we struggle to open up, but you can be talking to somebody who's a plumber or a banker, as you say, and you can talk about quite personal things, because there's no sense of kind of conflict or competition apart from on the bike. You know, you're sitting side by side or you're facing forwards. It's like kids in cars sitting next to their parents being driven to school. You have the best conversations.
Well, the voices we heard there were Sir Paul Smith, the famous designer, and Simon Mottram, the famous founder of Rafa, our headline sponsor. Very grateful indeed to Rafa. They were talking because Paul Smith has designed some very beautiful Rafa Cycling Club kit. It's available in very limited quantities in the following Rafa clubhouses: in Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Hong Kong, London, Los Angeles, Melbourne, New York, Seoul, Taipei, and Tokyo. I got told off for my pronunciation of Taipei. You should have been correcting
that, I should.
That,
I wasn't
Daniel.
Listening. Sorry, Richard.
You've got to pay attention when other people are talking.
I was looking something up, I think.
Anyway, have a look at rafa.cc if you want to have a look at the Paul Smith designed RCC kit. It's very nice indeed. The stage then, Daniel, it didn't promise an awful lot. It was, we expected a bunch sprint. There was obviously excitement at the end with the three riders almost staying clear and one of them managing to do so. Yeah, some confusion at the end over the what the time gaps were, but a great result for a small team.
Yeah, it was, Rich. As we said, they've had mixed fortunes, the wildcard teams in this Giro. There's the kind of guillotine over the professional division team's head with the promised UCI reform, and a lot of them worried that they're not going to get invites to big races from next year. So that makes it doubly satisfying, I guess, for Nippo Fantini. They've had this project for a few years now. The team's been going. It's kind of Italo-Japanese team. Francesco Pelosi referred, or I referred to, the fact that on the first day of the Giro they'd had, Rich, you're going to remember his name, the Japanese rider who missed the time limit by quite a substantial margin in the San Luca time trial, which was an ignominious start, wasn't it, for a team who has had a rocky history with the Giro, because a couple of years ago they were very upset when they didn't get a wild card for the 100th Giro. There was kind of talk of legal threats, and they really took great umbrage at Maravegna and the Giro organised decision not to invite them. But I guess, as far as they're concerned, all's well that ended well today.
Yeah, and Ackermann narrowly lost out on the stage win, but was actually quite happy once he realised that he'd done enough to take the points jersey from Demar. And there were a lot of celebrations in the Bora Hansgrohe camp. Ackermann's girlfriend was visiting today as well. We watched the finish of the stage beside her. Yeah, they were celebrating as if he had won the stage. I spoke at the finish to two of his lead-out men, Michael Schwartzman and Rudy Zelig, who is his lead-out man and has really done a very good job at this Giro. We'll hear first from Schwartzman. When I spoke to him, I didn't know that Ackermann had done enough to take the jersey. And then we'll hear from Rudy Zelig.
That was a frantic day in the bunch, I guess.
I don't know, we didn't have the right time, I guess. And then the last 30 kilometers, we just went full gas. So it was Aqua, Israel, they mentioned that, and we pulled full gas.
I know Pascal's been struggling the last few days for the mountains, everybody has, but he said today you're in two minds about whether to try and bring it back together for a sprint. Did he feel better as the stage went on today?
I think he felt better, yeah. It was easier stage, and for him it's the first Grand Tour, so 3 weeks in a row, so just 3 weeks racing. It's the third week for him. It was hard some days ago, but today I think he showed that he's back.
But he might be back in the jersey now.
Yeah.
So that's a great result, because that's not going to change now, is it? Probably.
Now we have to keep it. It's still three more days or two more days, and we will see.
No stage win, but do you reflect on that as a great result because he's back in the jersey?
Yeah, the whole Giro was a big fight for the jersey, so luckily we got it back, and we are just preparing our sprint by ourselves and watching just for the victory. But finally, okay, we were second, but the jersey is a really good opportunity for us.
It looked like there was a lot of panic in the bunch there as they realised the gap was a bit bigger than they thought.
Yeah, after the first sprint for the points, we slowed down a bit because we thought, okay, only three guys in front, but then they went really, really fast. So yeah, the calculation was a bit wrong from the motorbike, so we start a little bit too late, but yeah, okay, doesn't matter.
You've been a very important part of the success of this Giro. Do you have a good understanding, rapport with Pascal?
We are really good friends, like also with Schwarzi. We're like a family, and this is the key for the success.
And how's it going to be the next couple of days? Two hard days. Is your job going to also be to try and help Pascal through those?
Yeah, I'm always staying with him in the climbs. Like yesterday, he had a really bad day. Together, we made it. And also the next day, same goal. Just keep fighting together, and then hopefully we arrived at Verona.
So Zelig said there, Daniel, the challenge now for Ackermann is just to finish the race. I mean, if he does, if he can get through the next 2 days, he should win the Ciclamino jersey, which for his debut in a Grand Tour would be quite an achievement.
Yeah, it would. And the sprinters here have been of a pretty high level. Sprints have been strong, with a lot of the new generation of emerging sprinters present, Caleb Ewan, Gaviria, and then more established names like Dimar. So yeah, it's a real fillip for him, and I suppose he was under a bit of pressure as well with Sam Bennett getting good results all season and some people sort of lobbying for him to be included in the Giro, or certainly in one of the major tours for Bora Hansgrohe this year. But Bora have made a big, a long-term commitment to Ackermann, and I think they'll probably feel that they've made a good decision on the basis of this Giro.
Another team we saw a lot of chasing today was Israel Cycling Academy. They were really committed to helping Chimalai, their sprinter, who's been there or thereabouts. And I guess the thinking was that a few of the sprinters have gone home now and it might open up. And we saw guys like Seneschal getting up there, who's not a pure bunch sprinter, but he's pretty quick. I guess we've spoken as well about just how teams have approached the racing in terms of whether to go with try and get in breaks or not. We've seen AG2R the last 2 days feature in breaks. Quite unusual for a World Tour team to do that. A lot of the World Tour teams seem to have other objectives, and we've kind of scratched our heads a little bit about that. But there was, Dimension Data haven't been any breakaways. Ryan Gibbons, their sprinter, was fifth today. Is that better than getting in a breakaway? I don't know.
Yeah, tricky. I think a few guys who wouldn't ordinarily be contending for a sprint thought they had a chance today. The likes of Gibbons, and Marco Haller was thinking that he might give it a go today, and I think he did for Katusha Alpecin. So you never really know at this stage of Grand Tour, do you? And everyone, we keep hearing that everyone's very tired. It kind of looked like a bit of a tired sprint behind Chima today. Dimension Data are in a difficult position on a sort of micro level here at the Giro. They don't know whether to go all in on certain objectives, get all behind, for example, Gibbons today. It has been Ben O'Connor for the general classification and prior to today, or spread the risks or spread the opportunities and kind of freelance a little bit with the individuals that they have. We talked, I think, a few days ago about that sort of dilemma being mirrored in the dilemma they've had in their race program as well. Do they concentrate all of their resources in what they perceive to be the more important races, or the races that offer them the best opportunities, or do they kind of try and spread it around across a couple of races that are happening simultaneously? I mean, they had a win today with Edvard Boasson-Hagen in the Tour of Norway, didn't they? So I spoke to Doug Ryder a couple of days ago. He said June is going to be massive for them. But it sounds as though he's minded at the moment to take a team of opportunists to the Tour de France, thinking particularly about the first week, which might not be good news for Mark Cavendish.
We're going to hear from Doug Ryder in tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, aren't we? Which focuses on some of the teams that look like leaving the Giro empty-handed. But I mentioned Israel Cycling Academy. I spoke at the finish to Conor Dunn, and you can see how a team strategy really constrains some riders. I mean, when he rode the Vuelta a couple of years ago as a free spirit in quite a team of free spirits at Aqua Blue Sport, Conor Dunn was in the break almost every day, and that's how he tends to race, or that's how he likes to race. Whereas here at the Giro, we've not seen him in any breaks. He's been really confined to working for the team sprinter, and that's affected obviously the way that his Giro has gone. He was called on today to do quite a lot of work to try and bring that break back, and I spoke to him at the finish.
You were visible, even more visible than normal there. A sense of panic in the bunch was there when they realised it was going to be touch and go.
We were riding him most of the day, it was under control. We got a time gap of 3 minutes, and then we were getting told it was 3 minutes, and then suddenly it was 4:30 in an instant. So I think there was they missed the time gaps up. I don't know on purpose or not, but we were given the wrong information anyway, and then suddenly we had to really chase hard and put more guys. Every team had to put more in than we wanted to. I was trying to hold back, and in the end I had to work as well. Oh, we had to go hard the last 30k.
Your team looked particularly sort of keen to bring it back together.
Yeah, we've been thinking about the stage the last week really. We knew it was the last chance for a sprint, so really up for it. Shame we got the time wrong, but the break gave it a good effort as well. I went pretty deep to bring it back, and I had actually recovered a little once the GC team started going and I got in the wheels and was trying to come back and do a lead out. Yeah, just the work of
What's it like after sort of dragging yourself through the mountains for a few days to find yourself back in this role and riding like that on the flat?
Yeah, it's good actually. Nice to be back on the flat for once. Put myself to use. I felt good today actually. Went pretty deep, so it's going to make the next 2 days even tougher.
The cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to our sponsor, Science in Sport. Very grateful to them for their support. And you can get 25% off your Science in Sport products, the full price items, with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. At scienceandsport.com. Congratulations to our second winner of a Science and Sport nutrition bundle, Alex. Not sure your surname, Alex, but it's at ALXNDRCRFT. I would say that would be Alexander Croft, would be my guess. So congratulations if that is indeed your name. If you'd like to be in with a chance of winning a nutrition bundle and some Rafa kit, all you have to do is follow the Cycling Podcast on Instagram and share the latest episode in your Instagram story via Spotify. The final winners, there'll be one male and one female, will get their hands on a Rafa Pro Team Aero suit, which uses the same technology and race-winning research as their EF Education First Pro Kit. So a great prize there if you follow the Cycling Podcast on Instagram and share the latest episode in your Instagram story via Spotify. You will go into our big hat and a couple of names will be pulled out. Any more on today's stage, Daniel, before we talk to a couple of the GC guys?
It was a bit of another kind of quite turgid sort of stage, another transitional stage, really. Yesterday had an exciting finale, and it was a lovely setting at the venue for the 2020 biathlon World Championships in the middle of an absolutely beautiful region of Südtirol. However, I think back-to-back, these have been two stages that have... I think people knew that today's stage was not going to really throw up any GC action, but yesterday was probably a little bit tamer than people would have wanted. People looked at the last week of this year and thought, oh yeah, all the mountains are packed in the final week. But what we have had in effect is a stage on Tuesday which was shorn of the Gavia, which, okay, it might have made it a more exciting stage, but it took a little bit of the sort of oomph out of the last week. And then we've got one fantastic huge stage on Saturday, but you know, tomorrow is a fairly benign summit finish, and it possibly has lacked a little bit of punch as a Giro route. I mean, we talked so much in the first week about, you know, the lack of an early summit finish, which is the norm in the Giro. And last week, Rich, I've been sort of speaking to a few people about why this has happened, whether Maraveni, the race organizer, has any regrets or is likely to have any regrets about the way he's plotted this year's course. Publicly, he'll say that he hasn't. However, I think what actually happened with this year's Giro route, the untold story is that the Giro should have started in Matera in Basilicata, right in the south of Italy. Matera is a beautiful old city which is often used as a location for films that are supposedly shot in Jerusalem. In actual fact, they're shot in Matera, a really beautiful place down in the south of Italy. Anyway, there's been a huge scandal there at a kind of regional government level, which sort of all kicked off in July last year. I understand a couple of weeks before the deal was going to be done for the Giro to start there. And then, lo and behold, 4 or 5 weeks later, the rumours started about Bologna. And effectively, Maraveni had a very, very difficult job on his hand to kind of piece together a Giro route, which was pretty much finished, done and dusted, ready to go, but with a new starting point. And he had to make a lot of changes to what he intended to do. And the result has been a big compromise as far as he's concerned. You know, why don't RCS communicate this? Is it in their interest to communicate this? It's a kind of interesting question, but the fact that they haven't really said anything about it has left them open to criticism about the route, which, you know, maybe is a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, I've been aware of a few people commenting on the Giro not really grabbing them. We've got a Facebook discussion group, and there was quite an interesting conversation on there about whether this year's race has grabbed them. And there's always a question of whether it's the route or the riders, to what extent each is to blame. I think as well, you know, in the build-up to this Giro, we were really anticipating a really fantastic race, a showdown between Dumoulin, Egan Bernal, Lopez,
Superman. Simon Yates.
Simon Yates, yeah. And it's that obviously didn't transpire. We've been deprived of Demula and Bernal. And Lopez
Superman
hasn't perhaps been as good as he was last year. And you know, we've seen a new name emerge, Carapaz, as a Grand Tour contender, but he's appeared remarkably sort of unruffled. I mean, there's still two hard days to go, and he's ridden pretty smoothly into the pink jersey and not appeared to be in too much trouble. And I guess once again the question might be whether within that team, with Mika Landa again in that position of being the support act, whether over the final couple of days we might see some kind of internal politics playing out. But it all looks...
You're going to say it looks like a formality?
Yeah, I mean, Nibali is the one sort of... the guy in there in the mix who can really make the race very exciting over the next couple
of
days.
Well, Rich, I tried to tease some hint out of Mikel Landa that he wasn't going to be happy just to give Carapaz an armchair ride to victory. And I spoke to him this morning, asked him first about Movistar's tactics in this Giro, which seems to have been more aggressive than we've seen from them in the past.
First of all, the Giro is a different race, no? It's difficult to find a team with who can control, no, the race, like Sky, for example, on the Tour, no? Part of this, Carapaz is very strong. I'm feeling better and better day by day, so I think all together, no, makes the race more aggressive. Yeah, I would like, no, I would like to win this Giro, so to win a Giro. Not, I don't know if it's this year, no, I think this year is difficult. But I think it's the race I prefer, no? So I would like to win sometimes.
So it was Mikel Landa at the start this morning.
Yeah, maybe I'm reading too much into it, Rich, but interesting to hear him say there that he felt he was getting better every day. A little bit ominous.
I mean, you know, remember the free Landa campaign at the Tour de France a couple of years ago when people felt that he was being held back. When he was obviously a teammate of Chris Froome. He plays this role very well, doesn't he, Landa? There's something, I think it's partly because he's so sort of inscrutable, and I've joked on Twitter about him always having the same expression, no matter whether he's winning, losing, suffering, whatever. He has got this kind of, yeah. I think when we think of the best kind of climbers, they climb with a sort of a grace and an ease, and he has that. He's great to watch, and because it looks so easy for him, you think there's more there. There's more to come, and that he's kind of holding back somehow. Even when he's on the attack, it looks kind of so easy and graceful. So there's a sense that you have that, you know, Landa could just be unleashed. But I'm not sure that he can be unleashed or that there is like much more there.
No,
I don't know.
There's a kind of nonchalance about him, an effortlessness, which inclines you to think that he doesn't actually ride his bike apart from when he comes to races.
I can't imagine
him training somehow.
I remember at Team Sky, they said that he was so sort of naturally talented that he got really upset and unsettled when his legs were sore because he wasn't used to having sore legs. And you know, kind of, I don't know if that's a kind of taken on some urban myth quality, but he does give that impression, Landa, of just being a, you know, a sort of cycling caviar
and a guy who seems to react to stress pretty well. It's going to be interesting, Rich, just to observe the contenders over the next couple of days and their mental approach, really. Carapaz is in an unaccustomed... Carapaz is in an unaccustomed position. He's never led a Grand Tour 3 days from the end before. A lot of pressure. Different kind of pressure on Vincenzo Nibali. Now that, you know, it's just occurred to me that, you know, the mental element of Nibali's race in the next 3 or 4 days is going to be interesting. 3 days, only 3 days left. But fortunately... Nibali has a mental coach, and his name is Pier Marino Rosti, and I spoke to him on the phone a couple of days ago.
As a coach or someone who trains sports people, you have to find a way to make the movement or the action pleasurable, stimulating, and of course efficient. But you realise that all of this comes from the mind. I was a conventional physical education graduate and coach, but I moved towards psychology because I wanted to find out what happened in the mind when someone was playing sport. I realised that when someone did something effectively, it was because the brain wanted to do it well, it assimilated the action and it managed it. Once I started to realise this, I developed a kind of psychophysical concept, which is what I use now. But anyway, Vincenzo is one of those athletes who already has a lot of the attributes you'd associate with champions in other disciplines. The Federers, the Nadals, the Valentino Rossis. They have something special that's innate. I've also struck up a good rapport with him, and as much as specific exercises I do with him, sometimes I hope that me just being there can relax him. We've also watched videos of the Giro stage courses together and done visualization exercises. For example, you might imagine yourself riding the San Marino time trial, and sometimes the brain doesn't distinguish between the imaginary vision and accomplishing the action in real life. I'll also do yoga or stretching exercises, which help with body consciousness, or breathing exercises, which are another tool which help to know your body better. If you're emotionally aroused or stressed, your breath will reflect that, and the reverse is also true. If you're calm, you'll breathe well in a relaxed manner. We also work on that. The best time to do all of this is at training camps on the Teide, or when we're in Calpe in the winter. The other aspect of it is just talking. He might be absorbing more and more stress, internalizing it, and then it's my job to find the little key to unlock it and create a liberating effect. He might end up telling me to get stuffed, but telling me to get stuffed may have a positive net effect. A lot of what I'm trying to do might be fairly novel in cycling, but it's not in, say, tennis or golf.
So Nibali's mental coach has quite a big job on his hands, does he? Or does he? Because I'm thinking Nibali is somebody who, I've said before, there's not a lot of pressure on him, I don't think. You know, I think that he can afford to put on a good show over the next couple of days. And if he goes down in flames, so be it. You know, he's won the Giro twice. It's not going to mean an awful lot to him to finish on the podium, I don't think, again. He can, his reputation would be enhanced more by actually trying to win it and falling well short than by just riding defensively and finishing on the podium.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the notion that Nibali would need a mental coach is kind of one that I find difficult to reconcile. I'm not suggesting that he definitely does, but he is using Piermarino Rosti. Because one of the distinguishing traits about Nibali is this kind of looseness, and it's a physical looseness and a kind of a spontaneity, a sort of mental looseness at times as well. And you know, he's someone who, again, maybe because of the aesthetics of the way he rides a bike, seems to be in a sort of flow state. And it's interesting that, you know, Rosti's work is very much centered on the sort of, well, obviously the marriage of the physical and the mental, and this idea of sort of unlocking, you know, the body's natural impulses and you know, the kind of joy of movement. But Nibali is someone who has a kind of natural sort of grace about his movement, and as I say, like a looseness and a fluidity which is, I imagine, envied by some of his rivals.
It's like it harks back to what we were saying about Landa as well, though, isn't it? It's just it's an outward impression. It's an outward expression of fluidity. You don't know what's going on inside, and just because somebody looks so smooth and elegant and graceful on the bike doesn't mean that, you know, they're not suffering and going at their absolute limit. It's just I think it's a mistake sometimes to assume that outward expression is reflective of what's going on in inside. And who knows with Nibali. But we're expecting a show from him. He is, as you've said, a showman. A guy, there is a bit of intrigue around the Young Riders competition. Pavel Sivakov was in that jersey for a while. Miguel Angel Lopez.
Superman.
Is in it now. He's got a 2-minute lead on Sivakov. You don't imagine him crumbling in the last couple of days, Lopez.
Superman. No, but Superman's had an interesting Giro, hasn't he? Because I was thinking about this earlier. If he rides into Verona in much the same fashion that he's ridden thus far, we have to caveat this. He had a lot of bad luck early in the Giro. But I would suggest that his career is at a bit of a, not a crossroads, but maybe for the first time in his career, he's not really advanced in a major tour. And people will start to ask questions, particularly, you know, we see them every day, the Colombian TV crews, the media interest from Colombia is intense, and it would be very easy to start being perceived as sort of yesterday's prodigy,
also,
yesterday's man.
As I understand it, he's not got a lot of goodwill built up with the Colombian media. And, you know, I noticed yesterday Esteban Chavez, who was second on the stage, there was a Colombian crew waiting for him beyond the line, and Chavez gave him quite an angry gesture to indicate that he wouldn't stop and speak to them. And I don't know what was going on there, but I think Chavez and Lopez have both had sort of difficult relationships with their local media. And Lopez, I mean, we're talking about the, I suppose, mental fragility, mental strength, and you get the impression that he is somebody who perhaps struggles with that burden of leadership and responsibility a little bit. And it's notable, like last year at the two Grand Tours where he finished on the podium at the Giro and the Vuelta, he came very late. You know, he wasn't riding the whole race with that sort of pressure. He found himself in positions at the Giro and the Vuelta very late on in the race where he was able to go with moves, perhaps because he wasn't that much of a threat to the jersey, at least, that he was able to kind of move up very late in the race rather than, you know, do what Carapaz has done, which has been be, you know, towards the pointy end of the race really throughout the whole 3 weeks.
But he's got a bit of a battle, hasn't he, Superman, to keep that white jersey?
Well, you spoke to Sivakov at the start this morning. Shall we hear from him now?
I will still miss maybe that power, you know, that extra power to follow really the best guys in crucial moments, like on the Mortirolo or I don't know, yeah, just that little power. I'm pretty happy how I'm consistent. It's not over yet. I just need to keep that consistency. If you have a bad day on Saturday, then you can lose a lot and lose a spot on the top 10, so that will be my main goal, to just try to stay as consistent, you know.
And you seem like mentally you find it quite easy to focus, or not easy, but it's something that you're able to do. Some guys can't focus for 3 weeks.
Also surprised for that, you know, it's like kind of a routine. Maybe in the beginning is the hardest moment, but when you get into it, you do the same things and stick to it, then it's, I wouldn't say easy, but it's easier, you know, just doing the same and same every time. Friday is, it's a hard climb. It's not super hard, actually. You know, it's pretty rolling, really fast climb, so I think it's going to be hard to make big gaps. And obviously on Saturday is, for me, it's the queen stage of the Giro. With the Gavia out, you know, it's going to be the queen stage. With two passes at 2,000 meters of altitude, it's going to be really hard.
I'm quite surprised how my body responded. You know, I feel pretty good. You're tired, everybody's tired, but recovering well, you know, and I think I'm where I should be. I'm not, like, you know, in the last few days, I'm not up there with the best, but I'm just doing I'm at my level, you know, like I said, where I should be, and just doing my best, and I really hope to keep that top 10 spot.
So that was Pavel Sivakov. Well, Daniel, this was a transition stage today, so I thought it'd be a good day to hear from a couple of riders at different ends of the spectrum. Two riders, one riding his final Grand Tour, that's Markel Irizar of Trek Segafredo, and a rider riding his first Grand Tour, Mikel Honoré, a Dane on De Koning Quickstep. He's a great prospect and a very, very interesting guy, and I was interested to hear his thoughts so deep into the race and with Verona in his sights now. And Markel Irizar, well, this is his 21st Grand Tour. He's 39 years old. He'll retire after the San Sebastian Classic. He is a Basque. He owns a cafe in his hometown. He's had testicular cancer. He's got three sons. He's a very interesting guy, Markel Irizar. Very, very popular in his team and set to move into the team car as a DS, I think, in the near future. So I spoke to Honoré and Irizar. Let's hear what they had to say now.
I am Mark Lerizar. I am professional rider at Tercegafredo.
How many Grand Tours is this?
21. I think five Giros. It has been emotional. Like when Giulio Ciccone won, I told them, like, last year I came to the Giro after so many years again, and I told to my wife if I didn't know if I wanted to come back to the Giro. And the reason is because I had so much fun that I wanted to have a really good memory, and I had already good memory. When I had to come again this year, even if I'm suffering, you know, because in the climbs I'm struggling a lot, I think that was really good to come here because I'm enjoying even more. This race is super special, the tifosis, the country as well, I really love it. It's emotional, but at the same time I am enjoying, even if I am suffering, I enjoy it out of the race, because out of the road, I mean, because this race is super, super, super nice.
My name is Mikkel Honoré and I'm riding for the Koenig Quickstep. Obviously, I'm starting to feel quite tired after all the work done in the first part of the Giro for Viviani and the team. When I was in the breakaway, you enjoy every moment. The crowds here are amazing, and the whole circus around the Giro d'Italia is absolutely a fantastic experience so far.
What do you remember about your first Grand Tour that you finished?
It's true that it was as hard as it is now. Already there, the Giro always has been hard, but from there already, you know, like I felt like this race is different. Yeah. It's different, and I don't know. Maybe it's because the tifosis. I don't know. Maybe it's because the environment. This is for me personally. This is the best 3-week race. The Tour maybe is the biggest. I think I'm not the only rider that says that the Giro is the best Grand Tour by far.
And what's the longest race you had done before this?
I think it was Tour de l'Avenir last year, 10 or 11 stages. So we doubled that up. I've already felt like I learned a lot doing this Giro, from small things such as recovery. You know, every single minute you can stay more in the bed. You can really benefit from it in the last week here. My body before the Giro or before every Grand Tour, you never really know how your body reacts, and so far I've been feeling good.
How do you look at young riders?
I would say that they are much more smart than when I was their age. Here, for example, in the team we had Matteo Moschetti. I was trying to give him some advices, but he's super smart guy, super, he knows everything more or less. Also Nicola Conci is here, he's doing pretty well, and also like he doesn't need to tell so many things, you know, when you see something you tell. But when I was young, I was telling to myself that when I was getting old, I would not be a typical old that was all day doing like, yeah, you do need to do like this, you need to do it like that. So now I try to give advices just when they ask me or when it is real, something that is really bad, they do their own thing. And like this, they can learn also more, no?
My roommate, Eros Capecchi, that's done the Giro 10 times, even won a stage here as well. One of the first great advices he gave me was to leave so-called dead back in the big truck and don't bring too much stuff with you around. All these small things, you know, make a big difference in the end.
I think I'm going to miss the chat after in the table, no? Especially in the dinner, because in the breakfast, normally you are a little bit, I say, stress, you know, because the stage is coming. But after dinner, you know, when you start talking about how was the race, after massage, these moments for sure I'm gonna miss. Luckily that I'm gonna be involved in the team, and I think still I can be part of this. In one way also for a domestic, you know, the last year especially that I couldn't have my own results, like my satisfaction or my pleasure was just to be part, helping to someone to achieve the goals. And if this guy was achieving the goals, was good for the team. I suppose that in the future it's going to be like this. I'm going to do another role, but if my riders, they achieve their goals, it's going to be good for the team and for myself, of course.
What were you most apprehensive about?
For sure, it was the length of the race. Also, I never done a gruppetto before, you know, and there are a lot of unwritten rules. Go easy on the climbs, you go full gas on the descent, and all these things is completely new to me, but it's also, yeah, it's also a really nice experience. I was most afraid because I had no idea how my body would react.
The biggest change for sure was to go from Euskal de Euskadi to Croatia, to go from a Basque team to international team. And even if I am super Basque, and everybody knows that I am super proud of being Basque, was the best decision that I took in my life. Being here in Trek, well, I mean the different structures of Trek has been super, super nice, and I always say that I feel home. I think I have found what I was looking for. It has been a really big pleasure to do the last 10 years in Trek, and especially to finish my career in Trek Segafredo.
Yeah, I think I've read around 100 pages or so, but you know, it's, yeah, both energy and mentally and also the time after the races haven't been as much as I thought. So this is for sure also a thing I learned for my next Grand Tour, is to not bring too many books with you. One is for sure enough. When you come in the bus, you just want to, listen to some music, relax, talk with your teammates and talk about the day, look outside and enjoy the views. Mentally, really tough also, and for sure, it makes it even better when you are around with a nice, really nice group of guys. This staff is amazing here. It's really, really great how they, support you with everything, and very experienced staff as well. So that makes also a big difference for especially a young guy like me.
It's true that in the race I'm pretty quiet, that I don't talk so much, and I don't like to annoy people on the radio. But once that we arrive to a table in the night, there I'm on fire, there I am full gas. I knew, I was not gonna be a big rider, maybe because I went through really difficult moments. I think I could tell people, when we had the morale was low and, when everybody was stressed. And this is what I tried to do. And I feel especially the big leaders also, but my teammates, they appreciate this. I try to be always positive and be always in good mood. The others, they need to say if it was like this, but this was my goal, to be positive and to try to help always in the bad moments.
I think the best moment was also the worst moment. It was yesterday on the Motorola. All the crowds there was amazing, but also the suffering. I never thought I'd come so much over my limit before in my career so far, if you can say that as a new pro, but for sure the experience riding up the Motorola was horrible but also fantastic at the same moment.
When I had cancer, I had 2 goals: to be a professional rider and to have kids and to have a family. I am the dad of 3 kids, 3 boys. I have done a long career with my problems, without being a big leader, but I have arrived till here almost 40 years old, and has been a big pleasure. To achieve this, I need to thank to everybody that has made this possible, and especially everybody that gave me opportunity, like Marega and Euskal Euskadi, Luca Garchulena, that has been my manager in the last years in Tres de la Freo.
So that was Markel Irizar and Mikel Honoré, who are at, as I said, opposite ends of the age spectrum and the experience spectrum. And Irizar riding his final Grand Tour, Honoré riding the first of probably many. Any other business for tonight?
Well,
Daniel?
We've got a mountain stage tomorrow, Rich, that finishes at San Martino di Castrozza. It's kind of the easy side of the Passo Rolle, which is the first climb that the Giro ever did in the Dolomites. It's a bona fide Dolomite pass. But it's not a particularly difficult climb. I think there might be opportunities there for someone like Primoz Roglic.
Remember him. We haven't talked about him for a while.
I don't think it's somewhere where the general classification contenders will sort of trade minutes. I think they will trade seconds, if anything. We might even see a sprint for bonuses there. So I think we'll probably see status quo going into Saturday's big showdown. Other news, Rich, we're near Treviso. The speciality that I'm hoping to eat tonight is risotto alla trevigiana, which is a risotto with kind of, it's a red sort of cabbage type thing. Trevigiana, very typical of this region.
Prosecco. The lady here in charge of the restaurant hotel has a lot of ground to make up, hasn't she?
She promised us it's going to be free. Bucksheesh.
Yeah, well, let's see. We'll report back tomorrow night. Kilometre Zero, the 9th and final Kilometre Zero of our Giro d'Italia coverage.
Do we know what it's going to be called yet?
We don't know what it's going to be called, but it's going to be about teams that have been struggling at this Giro and may well go home empty-handed. And we've spoken to quite a few riders and managers at those teams to get their thoughts on how difficult that is.
Maybe we should include ourselves in it, our struggle to find a bed tonight.
That might be a late addition. But yeah, Kilometre Zero has been supported by Hansgrohe throughout this Giro, and we're very grateful to them. They'll be also supporting Kilometre Zero at the Tour de France and the Vuelta a España. So thank you very much indeed to them. Before we go tonight, Daniel, shall we just say a few thank yous to friends of the podcast? If you want to become a friend of the podcast, you can sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com for exclusive episodes. Most recently, I think it was the most recent one, was it? The Revenants, the Marco Haller, Bernie Eisel, the story of their recovery from very serious injuries last year. That was a Daniel production, very good at his too. But let's say our thank yous to a few friends of the podcast. Thank you very much to Robin Patterson, Sarah Heidinger, Patrick McCarthy, Linda Gilmeister, Andrew Gladstone,
Marcus Stein, Matthew Squires, Julia Wright, William Garnett, Toby Ingham, Emily Gusso, and Pavel Tonkov. Oh, thanks, Pavel. I didn't realise that.
I think you made that one up. Oh, well, thanks, amazing. Pavel. Appreciate your support. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Rich.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.